This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as always, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, what are you doing staring into that box today?
No, Chris, this isn't a box. This is an orb, and I'm staring into the orb of hesitation. And I'm having...
The Orb of Hesitation.
Yeah.
I don't remember
I'm
that
having
one.
A really hard time, like, pulling myself away from it. I keep, like, almost doing it, but not. It's just... it's really frustrating, Chris.
I see. I think one of those was on the stage when William Shatner was in acting school. And that explains why he hesitates when he speaks so often.
So that's what happened. He just had an encounter with the Orb of Hesitation, and then everything was like this, because...
That's right.
It was more dramatic.
Exactly. And another person who had an encounter with the Orb of Hesitation was Willie Tanner on Alf, as Alf called him out on more than one occasion.
So true, Chris. You know, I'm jealous because I just don't know my Alf as well as you do. And unfortunately, it's not on the Orb of Netflix, and so I can't just go check it out there.
That's too bad. Well, you'll have to tune in to Alf FM when I get that started.
Oh, man, I cannot wait. Is that before or after Bosom Buddies FM?
Yeah, I don't know. I think I might combine them into one kind of TV land-like network. We'll see.
That's a good idea, actually.
But today, the reason we're talking about orbs is that's the topic for today. Our namesake, the orbs. And in today's show, we're just going to go through all of the different orbs that the Bajorans have discovered, which they call Tears of the Prophets, and just talk about how those play into the Bajoran religion a little bit and how they play into the storylines on Deep Space Nine, because it's a very unique storytelling mechanism that the writers came up with, which, as we talked about on the Ready Room this week with Larry Nemechek, at the end of Trials and Tribulations, you know, having the Orb of Time allowed the writers to send the Deep Space Nine crew back to Station K7 as well as get them back home, without having to find some kind of convoluted technical solution in order to do it. And yet it still worked with the story on Deep Space Nine. So Matthew, first of all, the origin of the orbs. What can we tell people about how, from a Bajoran perspective, what the orbs are, where they came from, and how they play into Bajoran beliefs?
Well, all of the orbs come from the Celestial Temple, and the most interesting thing, I think, about these orbs is they're, from the Bajoran standpoint, they're all found over a long period of time, and they're each gifts from the prophets that tell them different things, that each have a different effect on a user of the orb. Really reminds me, honestly... and I think really parallels well with the Christian idea of Scripture, and that Scripture is one book, and yet it's written over a long period of time, and yet has one cohesive story. And that each of these orbs are a different part of the prophets, and they give a different message to the user, and yet all of them are from the prophets, and all of them are guiding everyone and pushing them towards the prophets. You see, does that make sense, Chris? In the same way that the Bible does for Christians. And so I just really think that that's kind of interesting. And they each have different properties. You know, the Bible is broken up into different types of literature, and in the same way that each of these orbs does different things.
Yeah, it is an interesting parallel, because as they're crafting the Bajoran faith, they need to have these different elements that you do find in religions here on Earth in order to facilitate the storytelling. And that's what they've done here with the Tears of the Prophets. And you talk about a long period of time, and it's a really long period of time. It's actually 10,000 years. And over the course of 10,000 years, 9 of these orbs appear in the skies over Bajor. And they call them Tears of the Prophets because, of course, they're coming, as you said, from the celestial temple. It's like they're falling down to the Bajoran people. And the technology is interesting to me, because we know that the prophets they live outside of normal space-time. You know, they don't have a concept of linear time. And the effect that gazing into an orb has on someone is to pull them out of our normal space-time as well, and allow them to kind of experience things through the eyes of the prophets or the aliens who live in the wormhole. But by doing that, it allows them to see the future, it allows them to see the past, and then it has other very specific effects on them based on which orb they're looking at. And to me, it's a really interesting concept, even if you take the religious aspect out of it, because I've always been fascinated with time ever since I was a kid, because there's no doubt that there is an arrow of time in our universe that we perceive because of the way our brains work. At the same time, I feel that time as we know it is a construct of our own minds, and that there really isn't such a structured time to things as we perceive there to be. And that's one of the fascinating parts of Deep Space Nine to me, and the prophets, and how they're able to talk about how our linear perception of time affects our view of the world and our view of life. And so that's the basic concept of the orbs here.
Chris, I think that's really interesting what you were just talking about, you know, just the way that the orb works. And so this is one of the things too, I think, just on the spiritual aspect of the orbs. It almost seems like there is a part of the prophets that live in, like, the spirit of the prophet lives in each of these orbs. And so that when you open it, you are actually having an experience with the prophets, you know, in the same way that, again, Christians believe when you open up and read scripture, you're reading the word of God. It's not just something that somebody wrote. It's actually the word of God. And so I just think that's really interesting. You know, you open up an orb box and you're having, it's almost as if the spirit of the prophets lives inside the orb and allows you to then be transported or to be shown something, either prophecy, wisdom, unity, any of these things that these different orbs, that, you know, their kind of main function revolves around. It's the spirit of the prophets that really guides that. It's a very good, interesting, deep idea. And it's something that you could really spend a lot of time kind of like, okay, how does this work? Kind of trying to deconstruct it. But at the same time, it really makes for a beautiful mystery as well, you know, and really adds to just that idea of having faith.
Right. There is some sort of spiritual connection there. There's between the viewer and the prophets, there has to be some sort of connection in order for the orb to truly work. When we talked about the episode In the Hands of the Prophets, we talked about how Keiko is teaching about the wormhole from a purely scientific perspective. and Vedic Win wants it to be taught from a spiritual perspective. And likewise with the orbs, Federation scientists have tried to explain how these orbs work, because on the surface you can see that the orbs induce hallucinations, and they allow the viewer to see into the past or the future, and they gain insights into situations or dilemmas that they're facing. We often see that when they're facing some sort of dilemma, they'll go and they'll consult the orb to try to get guidance from the prophets. What is interesting to me as you approach it from a scientific perspective within Star Trek is that they try to explain it by saying that the orbs create excessive neuropeptides in the brain, and that is what causes these hallucinations. So I guess they're saying that the light emitted from the orb affects the brain chemistry. It causes the brain to produce more neuropeptides. But at the same time, they find that it doesn't work for everyone. So if it were simply a scientific explanation, you would expect that this would have the same effect on anyone who's viewing the orb. And that's simply not what happens. So there is, as you called it, a beautiful mystery. I think that's a great way of describing it, because there's something beautiful about the connection that the person looking at the orb has with the prophets. And certainly it's very mysterious as to what's going on.
Well, and it really goes to that whole idea that, you know, science can explain things so far. But then there gets a point where it can't go any farther, and especially when it comes to a lot of things revolving around religion. You can't really explain necessarily what is it about, say, Jesus or you know, somebody like him, like Buddha, that grabs somebody that makes them want to have faith in that person. You know, scientifically, it's not explainable in science, because it's not a scientific thing. It just isn't. And so I think that's really interesting that the writers of Deep Space Nine really did a fantastic job at creating a religion that feels so real in this world. But it also feels real in our world, I think, because it really accurately portrays faith. And so it does really kind of make me wonder in some ways, if there were some people on the writing staff who were, you know, adherers to a certain type of faith, and it really helped them bring this out, or at least maybe had grown up a lot in their life early, you know, very devout, and then kind of maybe fallen away. But you can tell that these writers know what they're doing when it comes to religion.
Right. Yeah. It could be that, or it could just be simply as writers, they're very well versed in various cultures, various religions, various beliefs, you know, to help them craft very believable stories. You know, we don't really know, but definitely they do know what they are sourcing here, and they do a great job of crafting it so that it fits within the Star Trek universe and with Bajorans. I thought what we would do now, Matthew, is to just go through all the orbs and talk about how they've appeared on the show and what their functions are, because they're scattered throughout the series, and we get little bits and pieces of information about them as we go along. Of course, we see orbs quite often, but we don't necessarily get a lot of detailed information about them. The first orb that we saw in Deep Space Nine was the Orb of Prophecy and Change, and we talked about earlier how these nine orbs appeared in the skies over Bajor over the course of 10,000 years. Now, the Orb of Prophecy and Change was the third orb that appeared over Bajor, and it's the first one that we see in the series, because this is the orb that Kai Opaka presents to Sisko when he visits her on Bajor, and that he gazes into when he sees his visions.
Yeah, this is the orb that also the spiritual writer Trekor encountered, and he wrote a series of prophecies about the emissary of the prophets, foreshadowing the arrival of the Sisko, and we see that in the episode Destiny. And so this is an orb that we actually, I don't know, Chris, I think this is the orb probably that we see or hear the most about. in
I think it
Deep
is.
Space Nine.
Yeah.
So it has a big influence, as orbs go, on the flow and the storyline of Bajor, and then, of course, of the show and the Emissary himself.
Exactly. This is the orb that all the other orbs refer to as the Man, because it's just the one that seems to be around at all the key moments. And other episodes where this appears are, or at least it's mentioned, is in The Circle at the beginning of season two. We find out that the Orb of Prophecy and Change was kept in the monastery that was led by Vedic Baral. We know that later on in the Mirror Universe, in the episode Resurrection, the Orb of Prophecy and Change is the target of the theft that Baral's mirror counterpart is trying to carry out. We also know that Baral consults this orb in The Collaborator when he was attempting to be elected Kai. And then this is also the orb that Sisko used to bring his visions into focus in Rapture.
And I think it's really interesting, too, that the last time we see this orb in the show, Kai Winn is consulting it, and she's really wanting to beg forgiveness from the prophets. She's seeking forgiveness for her encounters with the Paw Wraiths in Strange Bedfellows. As we know, it doesn't really go so well for her. The prophets really don't show her anything, and she chooses to make a deal with the devil, a.k.a. Dukat.
Which, again, I think supports what we talked about a few minutes ago, that there are some spiritual aspect, some connection between the viewer and the prophets that's being channeled through these orbs. Because, again, this orb is used by Sisko to help him find Bahala successfully, and at the same time, it's used by Kai Winn unsuccessfully to seek forgiveness for her involvement with the Paw Wraiths.
Well, and it really, again, goes to, you know, there are a lot of people who can read the Bible and not be convinced by it. And yet there are other people who open the Bible and they feel that it is speaking to them, that it is saying something to them, that it is speaking into their lives. And so in the same way, you know, the spirit of the Word of God, when you open it, it may or may not speak to you. The same thing will happen with an orb. You can open it, and in some ways it seems like it can read the heart of the user, and it's not there to perform for you. You know, it's there to help those who are devout. I think that's really interesting.
Or who have faith in something.
Exactly.
I think it's an interesting commentary on how our brains work and how faith or belief in something, whether it's religious or spiritual, or whether it's just in our own abilities, plays a really big part in the outcome. There is something there that is really difficult to pinpoint scientifically, without a doubt. Well, this orb appeared on Bajor about 3,000 years before the events of Deep Space Nine, so it's really a very old orb. And if you do the math for what that means on the Bajoran calendar, it comes out to be around 500 BC on our own calendar. So that's how old the Orb of Prophecy and Change is.
The next orb, Chris, is the Orb of Contemplation. And this is an orb that's housed in the Bajoran Temple aboard Deep Space Nine. We see it there. And sadly, this is the orb that is used by Gul Dukat as his tool to allow the Paw Wraiths to gain an entrance into the Celestial Temple and collapse the wormhole. And then, of course, it's also where Jen Zia loses her life.
The side effect of that is the death of Jen Zia.
Yes. So this is an orb, too, that we actually don't see again in the show. I mean, we know that the orb is on the station, and obviously people go to consult it. And I think that there are a couple of times where Kira references in the show that she's gone to consult the orb, but she never says what orb it is, but it's obvious it's probably the Orb of Contemplation. So this orb, though, for me, and when we do see it, it just brings up terrible memories.
Yeah, we don't know a lot about this one other than it's there on the station. And of course, the events in the episode, Tears of the Prophets. So let's move on to the next one. And this is the Orb of Wisdom. And this is an orb that was confiscated by the Cardassians prior to 2369. And this orb is purple. You know, the orbs have different colors. They have the gem on the side of the casing. This is a purple orb. And this one, you know, people talk about how the Ferengi play into Deep Space Nine. But the way that this orb got back to Bajor after being taken by the Cardassians is that it was purchased by Grand Nagus Zek.
Which is really, really funny. I love the fact that, you know, Zek can't resist opening the orb. He has an orb experience. And then he changes everything Ferengis know about Ferengis by writing the rules of acquisition revised for the modern Ferengi.
Isn't that a great title?
It's awesome. And completely rewriting the wisdom of the Ferengi from the perspective of the Eternal Prophets, which I think is really funny.
It really is. So that's in the episode Prophet Motive. And yeah, just the idea of Zek having an orb experience. Again, that's interesting as we're talking about how it doesn't affect everyone, but somehow it affected Zek.
Well, and it seems like that's, you know, for him, he has this orb experience and it does change him. So there's something in Zek that the prophets see is worthy of speaking to him and changing or at least giving him wisdom that he would accept. So I think this is really interesting, just the way that this orb works. You know, when you think about being able to consult timeless prophets whose yesterday, today, and forever is the same, you know, they would have a lot of wisdom. And you would know what is the best course of action in every situation because you've been in every single situation.
Right.
You would understand how all that works together. And so it's fascinating when you start to think about just exactly who and what and how these prophets interact with linear time and why, you know, we would consider this wisdom.
Right. And that's the perfect example of the other time that we see this orb being used in a more serious setting in the episode In the Cards, which is kind of a weird episode because it, you know, it's Jake and Nog in the baseball card. That's what I usually think about when I think about In the Cards. But actually in that episode, Kai Wynn uses the Orb of Wisdom to seek guidance from the prophets when she is deciding whether or not to sign a non-aggression pact with the Dominion, which of course becomes a very important part of the ongoing Deep Space Nine storyline as we move into the war. And also because, you know, our other show that we do together, Literary Treks, we should mention that this orb also appears in two novels. It appears in David R. George III's The 34th Rule, which is the book that he wrote together with Armin Shimerman. And this appears in Avatar and in Unity. So actually three novels.
Yes, it's definitely an orb that would, you know, I think get used quite a lot. I mean, again, being the Orb of Wisdom, I would think that you would want to consult this orb quite often when, you know, looking at which decision to make. Especially leaders, you know, anything like Sisko or the Kai, this is the kind of thing that you would be consulting, I would think, on a more regular basis as an orb.
Yeah, definitely. So the next orb we have is the Orb of Memory. And this orb is really not one that we learn anything about on the TV series itself, other than that it exists. This one is actually used more in the novels. And as we've talked about on Literary Treks, the Deep Space Nine relaunch novels, where they basically do an eighth season of Deep Space Nine that picks up after What You Leave Behind, this is the orb that the Enterprise E finds and that Elias Vaughn looks into, which changes the course of his life much in the same way that the Orb of Prophecy and Change helps Sisko realize what his destiny is.
Yeah, and it's also the orb that leads Kira to find the tomb that contains the bodies of the 10,000 people who have been guarding right. these prophecies.
Also in the Bahala. Avatar books.
Yes, and so this is a fantastic orb. I think it's something that I would have loved to have kind of seen in the show. It seems like this might have been the better orb to use when Kira travels back in time, wrongs darker than death or night, because it's the orb of memory. And so maybe being able to be in her mother's memory without actually, you know, anyway, I think this would have been a good orb to use.
Yeah, because you would think that the orb of memory would have a time travel element to it, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but unfortunately, we didn't get to see this one very much on the show, but it does play a very important role in the relaunch of Deep Space Nine as you get into the novels. Now, you just mentioned wrongs darker than death or night, and the orb that Kira actually used in that episode is the Orb of Time.
And the Orb of Time is one of those that's just really interesting. We talked a lot about this orb when we did the Ready Room. With Larry Nemechek talking about Trials and Tribulations, and this is where we actually get this orb for the first time. What's really interesting is that this is the orb that the Cardassian Tetepa Council is giving back to the Bajorans. And then, of course, they pick up the hitchhiker, Darvin, who has found a way to use the orb to travel back in time, and he's hoping to be able to kill James Kirk because of it.
Right, yeah, that's in Trials and Tribulations. And the Defiant is actually in orbit of Cardassia at the beginning of the episode to pick up this orb and take it back. And what I love about the orbs is that because the framework of the orbs had been established already from Emissary, the writers, when they had to find a way to transport Sisko and his crew back to the 23rd century to put them in the episode, The Trouble with Tribbles, as part of the homage to Star Trek's 30th anniversary, they had this orb set up right there in place. And so all they needed to do was say, you know, yeah, there's an orb called the Orb of Time. And that transports them back. And we don't need any technobabble. We don't need to slingshot around the sun. We don't need to be sucked in by a black star. It's just, this is what happens with Bajoran orbs. And there you are, and you're at Station K7.
Yeah, that's one of those things that is really fantastic about the writing staff of Deep Space Nine and just this creation that they've made, really giving you that ability to do something like that. And then, of course, wrongs darker than death or night, Kira is able to go to this orb and see if what Gul Dukat has told her is true about her mother. And it really is a fascinating episode of complete mind warpedness for her. You know, so much of the episode she's believing really that her mother is a traitor and a collaborator and you know, somebody who doesn't deserve her love or respect anymore. And then finding out that really the reason she's doing this is because she's doing what she can to keep her family alive is fantastic. And I can't imagine what her mother went through, spending her life pretending to love somebody like Gul Dukat.
Right. Yeah. This orb does facilitate a very important character moment for Kira and how that unfolds. So this orb, after being brought back after the journey from Cardassia, was set up in the Temple of Iponu on Bajor. So if you want to gaze into the Orb of Time, that's where you need to go.
I'm booking my flight there right now, actually, Chris. The flights are really reasonable to Bajor right now. It's only 3 bars of gold-pressed latinum.
Wow, that's quite a bargain.
But I am flying Spirit spaceships, so I'm not sure if I'll get there in one piece.
Yeah, well, be careful, and don't fly too close to the wormhole either.
Oh, good call.
All right. So we have just a few more orbs to talk about here. And the next one is the Orb of Truth. And this, again, is an orb that did not appear on the television series. It's one of the five unnamed orbs in the Bajoran religion. Not all of the orbs were given names in the television series, but we did know what the actual count was. And so they have been fleshed out in the continuation, in the literary universe. The Orb of Truth is kept in the Kendra Shrine in the Kendra province on Bajor, which, of course, we do hear about quite often on this TV series.
This is the orb that appeared in the novel Day of Vipers by James Swallow, and the leader of the religious group, the Aurelian Way, consults this orb to see if they should decide whether or not to make an alliance with the Bajoran religion, which I think is really interesting. And just in general, this orb in the first place, being called the Orb of Truth, saying, at least from the prophet's perspective, that there is a universal truth, so that anybody who looks into this orb can find out what the truth is. And I think that's really fascinating. I do wish, and I think that this would have been a really interesting topic to have discussed on the show, because it is a really big topic, as we talked with Greg Cox last week about this idea of truth. And, you know, especially in today's world with just kind of the thinking along the lines of everything being very relative and relativistic, this kind of thing would have been a really interesting topic on Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, it would have been, because I don't know that I can subscribe to the idea that there is some sort of universal truth that is constant for everyone. I think it is very relative. I think truth is in the eye of the beholder. And if they are going to say here that somehow the prophets, through their nonlinear nature, have some insight to the workings of the universe and the workings of life, that there is something that you might call truth that is constant through the universe, and that you can tap into that by looking into the Orb of Truth, that would be a very interesting topic to explore. And the fact that James brings together a Cardassian religious group and a Bajoran religious group, and these two groups are having to decide whether they're going to form an alliance, is really fascinating given the history of Cardassians and Bajorans. So it is too bad we didn't get to see that explored more, and we didn't get to see it on the television series. Let's go on to the next orb, which is the Orb of Souls. And again, this is another of those five unnamed orbs. And this one was fleshed out by Michael A. Martin in his novel Cathedral.
The Orb of Souls is really interesting, Chris, because it's said by Opaka Salon to be the orb that's the most stressful on a person to actually open this, to have an experience with this orb. Is something that is really difficult on a person to go through. It seems almost in some ways maybe that this is the orb that you would open up and you would have that kind of long night of the soul really soul-searching kind of idea going on here. I think this is really interesting.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it sounds almost like a dangerous kind of orb, perhaps, the way it's described as being very trying on the individual. We know that a lot of the orbs were stolen by Cardassians, and one reason that we didn't hear about this orb, if we want to kind of retcon here a little bit, on the TV series, is that this was discovered in 2376 in an Obsidian Order bunker in Cardassia City. So this one was uncovered later on down the road. And it was used by another author, Olivia Woods, in two of her novels, one of them being Fearful Symmetry, where Sisko looks into the Orb of Souls and sees seven other Siskos from alternate universes, which kind of reminds me of Worf in Parallels, where you see like all the different Worfs, the different Rikers, and everyone from all the different universes, which of course was not an orb vision, but has kind of a similar feel to it. And then in the continuation of that in the Soul Key.
Well, and that's what was really interesting about that vision that Sisko had, because he found out that not only was he the Sisko in his universe, the Sisko was actually present in each one of those universes as the emissary. And so that was a really big moment, I think, for the Deep Space Nine relaunch, really driving home the point that Sisko himself is a savior-type Christ figure in not just one universe, but in as many universes as maybe there are. He sees at least seven, but who knows how many.
Right. It is interesting because this concept of multiple universes and like the many worlds theory and you know, Schrodinger's cat, for example, this idea that at each moment in our life, when we make a decision, the universe splits. And there's a universe in which we chose to do something and a universe in which we chose not to do something. So each decision, it keeps splitting. And by the nature of that, you would think that someone like Sisko as the emissary, he wouldn't be the emissary in every universe. But by finding out that, in fact, he is the emissary in every universe would only serve to reinforce that there is something very special about him. So if, you know, he tries to even think that maybe he's not the emissary, the fact that it's true everywhere shows that it's something outside of the normal existence that we have.
Well, and it really goes to the point we were just talking about earlier about truth and the orb of truth and whether or not there actually is, you know, kind of a universal truth. So that kind of drives home that point then that, you know, the prophets have a corner then, it seems like, on truth. And that's a very interesting idea to just kind of think about.
It is. And I like that. The prophets have a corner on truth. They've got it all.
That's what happens, you know, when you're out of time and you can go anywhere, do anything, because you are everywhere.
They've cornered the market on truth.
Yeah. Oh, goodness.
Okay, just three more orbs to talk about here. Two of them real quick, because we really don't know anything about these orbs other than they are mentioned, along with the Orb of Souls, by Michael A. Martin and Andy Mangels in the novel Cathedral, as the two remaining unnamed orbs. This is the Orb of Destiny and the Orb of Unity. So with that, we then know what all the five unnamed orbs from the television series are called. So let's move on to the last one, which we do know about from the television series, and this is the special 10th orb that was not discovered previously. It wasn't one of those nine that appeared in the skies above Bajor. This is the Orb of the Emissary, and this is a very important orb in the Deep Space Nine story. This is the orb that Sisko finds, that he was guided there by visions of his mother in Image in the Sand.
This is probably one of the most interesting things to happen in Deep Space Nine at the beginning of Season 7. This is where we really dive in to Sisko as the emissary and just how important he is. And I think this may be where Olivia Woods pulls that idea that the Sisko is so important that he would be in other universes, because we see that he has his own orb. This orb can't be used by anybody else. It's only for the emissary. And so I think that's fascinating for the show. And it really further exemplifies just how important Sisko is. And then, of course, you know, you have that whole point where Sisko is struggling with the vision of Benny Russell he's being given by the Paw Wraiths, telling him to wipe over the large mural of writing that he has all over his wall. And then at the same time, the prophet's trying to pull him to say, no, you just keep writing. And then there's that desire in Sisko. He wants to keep writing, but, you know, so all of this working together, I think, is really a fantastic storytelling, and it made for me one of the most interesting storylines in the show.
It did. And that was a brilliant connection, too. We've talked about it on the Ready Room anyway, of when we did Far Beyond the Stars, about the fact that in Far Beyond the Stars, the prophets are using Benny Russell as a way to convey to Sisko his importance and his role as the emissary. And then in Image in the Sand, the Pa Wraiths are using the Benny Russell vision to try to dissuade him from finding this 10th orb. And finding this orb is really important because when Dukat used the Orb of Contemplation to collapse the wormhole in Tears of the Prophets, all the 9 known orbs went dark. And it was the discovery of the Orb of the Emissary by Sisko on the planet Tyree that reactivated those 9 orbs. So, you know, without Sisko being led by the visions of his mother to find this orb, without him overcoming that Pa Wraith vision of Benny Russell where they're trying to dissuade him from getting there, it could have been a catastrophic moment for Bajor, because these 9 artifacts that are so important to their religion had all basically been turned off.
And it is so fascinating, too, because, you know, the Bible depicts, you know, Satan as being the angel of light. And that's really right. What happens to this this vision that he's being given by the Pa Wraiths. They are taking everything that he's been given by the prophets and twisting it just enough. And I think that's fascinating because you can really see the connection there with, you know, that kind of Christian idea of Satan versus God, and that Satan twists things just enough because there's just enough truth that you want to buy into it, but there's just enough lie to make it not the truth. Just really great writing here for the Deep Space Nine staff and really understanding these ideas of religious and spiritual life. Again, for me, this is why it's my favorite show, because I feel like my worldview really is reinforced by this show, whereas a lot of their Star Trek series, TOS and a little bit of TNG, kind of denigrates that worldview, and here they really make it valid, and I like that. But not to say that other views aren't valid as well. They just help reinforce that this can be something that is okay for somebody to live by, and they shouldn't be looked down upon because they do.
Right. Well, it just makes you think about things. You know, it presents you with many different angles, many different possible interpretations, and it really forces you to think about what you believe. And it shows that many different viewpoints on that subject can be valid. And it's these orbs are just a tiny part of Deep Space Nine, but a very important part. And they're great storytelling devices. And that's why we wanted to take everyone through them today. You know, they are these artifacts that are on the show. We know they're there. They're mentioned. They are consulted by, especially Kira, by Sisko and others from time to time. But I think ultimately they tend to be kind of overshadowed by all the other things happening on the show, because there's so much richness in Deep Space Nine. Mm. So those are the Tears of the Prophets. All 10 of them. And maybe with this in mind, as you do a rewatch of Deep Space Nine, you can watch for how these orbs are used, especially as a plot device by the writers.
Well, Chris, why don't you tell everyone where they can find us?
Well, if you'd like to share your thoughts on the orbs, on any other aspect of Deep Space Nine, you can go to our website and there is a contact form there. Go to trek.fm/contact and you can choose to send to a show, send it to the orb. That will come to Matthew and me. You can also join us over on our forums at trek.fm/forums. There's a section there for the orb. There's one for Deep Space Nine. And you can talk to us about the show. You can talk to other listeners and get into some deeper discussions. You'll also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. And of course, you'll find us on Twitter under the username trekfm. Matthew, what if people would like to find you personally?
Well, I am on Twitter at MattRushing02, and then, of course, you can find me on Trek FN doing the book reviews, as well as Literary Treks, where we do talk books and comics. So if you really enjoy the books and comics part of today's orb, take a listen over there. We actually went through the Avatar series, which was the beginning of the Deep Space Nine relaunch in the books, where we do find the Orb of Memory. So if you'd like to know more about that, check us out over at Literary Treks.
And don't forget, also on Literary Treks, you know, we've had great discussions with Una McCormick, with James Swallow, with many other authors who write a lot of the Deep Space Nine continuations. And so if you're interested in this topic, you'll enjoy that as well. So if you want to find me, I am on Twitter as well. My username is C Brian Jones. That's the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can find me pretty much anywhere in social media under that username. And you'll also find me each week on The Ready Room, where we do talk about Deep Space Nine, as well as the other four live-action Star Trek series, and lots of Star Trek news. Matthew is with me sometimes, and I'm also joined by a lot of the other hosts from various Trek FM shows, as well as many other friends outside of the network, and even Dr. Trek himself, Larry Nemechek, from time to time. As we mentioned, this week we have a great discussion about the DS9 episode Trials and Tribulations for you to check out, and that's at trek.fm/trr.
Well, thanks for listening, and join us again next time as we gaze into the orb.